therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Welcome to Shooter's Corner, your program for conversation on guns, shooting, and your Second Amendment rights. Brought to you by Price RV, Auto Trim Design, by Rogers Auto Repair, and by Frontier Outfitters. Now, your host, Chuck Indereeden.
Welcome, listeners. It's currently, I think, 37 degrees, my car said, as I was driving in here today to the studio here at the KFAR. You're listening to us at 97.5, 660 AM. Remember, you can always call in at 458-TALK. That's 907-458-TALK or 8255. That's what those, like, if you have the numbers, letters on your phone, you can figure that out, I'm sure. Anywho, if you missed last week's show, it's not posted yet. But thank baby Jesus that we do have Teresa back in the studios now, and she'll be able to get that up and running for us. Because we had Keith Berrien on last week with Fairbanks Action Shooters, and so that was actually a pretty decent show, I thought. What do you think, Matt?
I thought it was a really good show, and I think there was a lot of information that was put out there that the masses generally don't either know or get, and I think it helped people kind of push themselves to being better with their firearms proficiency.
Yeah, I think so too. And then you also went out and actually shot a USPSA match on Tuesday night.
Yep, correct. Went out this past Tuesday. First one I've done that was actually for record in about 10 years. Like I said on the show, it's a very humbling experience, and I think I actually did very well. Had a little hiccup, but at the end of the day, way better than what I thought I was going to do.
I thought it was pretty cool that you said that most of the all of the people, they weren't like Richards. They were pretty cool with you.
Yeah, they were. None of them were Richards. Everyone was very, very, very friendly and welcoming. Everyone introduced themselves. It's also very weird to see people that go to a club be as hands-on with everything. I showed up about 20 minutes early, and everyone was helping set up. I immediately hopped in. But everyone's really quick with the setup, making sure all the targets are there. Everyone's listening to each other. There's no bickering. And then in between stages where we're shooting the cardboard targets, you can't just leave them all with a bunch of holes in them. You have to paste them up. And everyone, the moment they said range clear, everyone's running out with pasties. So it was a very, very cool experience up here. Different than what the lower 48 does.
I would agree. That's good. All right. So, hey. Always go to KFARradio.com, and you can always listen live to this show as well. They have an app. I did not know that until Melissa brought that up the other day. And if I sound like I'm a little under the weather, I just am like a little froggy. But I got some water for that.
Clint Eastwood impression. Water.
Is it my Clint Eastwood impression?
Sounds good.
Doesn't sound good? It's more of a radio voice if I'm froggy? No? Teresa, no.
Throw him under the bus. All right, Teresa.
Yeah. Hey, but before we get started, I saw some pictures that our producer was posted. Are those like bodies that were actually like caught in like the Vesuvius like volcano or something?
Yeah. They're the castings.
So that's not the actual body that's encased in rock.
No, because the body's like decomposed already. So it's the casting that was around them, and then they decompose and the casting stays.
I just learned
so technically
about that
they're inside there.
No, not anymore. No.
Where'd it go?
It's all decomposed and gone away.
Inside that rock still, though.
Inside the casting.
Which is still rock.
Yeah, I guess. It's like a plaster type situation from what I'm told.
Yeah, see? Okay. Made my point.
I did learn that very recently. I thought the bodies were still just there encased in rock. And no, they took the remains. Essentially, they were making a mold. And then they would fill the mold and then put the bodies back out there. So they're not real.
Oh, okay.
They don't exist anymore. I mean, it's been a while, but yeah, for the lifetime.
It's like wondering if that was like a real person that was like petrified in like lava or something.
At some point it was. But yeah. Now it's just a casting. Like, right. Take your arm out of a cast.
I was like, wow, times are weird.
But I did not learn this in school.
No, that was really, really cool. Interesting. Great photos, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. So anywho, let's get the show started. Well-regulated militia. Being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. You know, I had an interesting conversation the other day with a friend, and we'll get to that here in a minute. But let's talk about this week in firearm history. I thought this was pretty cool. Did you know that it wasn't until 1955 that a patent was issued to, let's see, who is it? Lexi Ray Crittenden and Robert Rising for a firearm with a pair of action bars. So you know what that is, right? So on a shotgun, how you have the pump action. Mm-hmm. On one side, there would be an action bar that would move the bolt back and forth. And then they'd put another action bar on the other side because apparently, and it is true, because I do have an old Mossberg 500 20 gauge that literally only has one action bar. And if you twist the pump action, sometimes you can bind up the action.
Ooh, I did not know that.
Right. So what they did is they put dual action bars on there so it would be more reliable and reduce the binding under stress. Because most shotguns at that time only had that one action bar. However, I had to do some more digging on this. And so I asked, hey, are there any current shotguns that still have single action bars? And the answer is yes. Okay. There are some other ones that are kind of like out there in the world, but the Ithaca Model 37 is the more popular one, okay, which is the iconic bottom ejecting pump shotgun originally designed by John Browning and John Patterson. Uses a single action bar located on the left side of the receiver. It's been in continuous production since 1937. That's pretty wild. Had some interruptions due to the company changes and stuff, but it's available, obviously, in 12, 16, 20, and 28 gauge. But current models, get this. Start around $1,200.
Deesh.
Yeah, they're proud of them, apparently, because it has a single bar. Put a double bar on it, we call it a Remington 870, and then what, like?
$400.
$400. Yeah, exactly. Let's see. And then in September 29th of 1995, I didn't realize it would took this long to get it. I actually dug into the patent on this one to look it up. But they actually replaced the toxic lead with a non-toxic alternative, improving the safety and manufacturing and more reliable ignition of the actual primer stuff. I thought that was pretty cool. So we don't have any special guests today. We just have you and Matt and I. Yeah. And, oh, Teresa, if she ever wants to chime in, that's always good. We had Perry on the show the other day. He was running the board for us. He was like, I think he was like dying laughing over there so much.
Yeah.
We're talking about putting socks on horses and stuff.
Socks on horses, potato silencers.
Yeah. Online. With the Texas Rangers.
Yep.
We had Montana Kid Hammer in here. It's pretty funny. You have to go back and listen to it. Anywho, but next week we do have Ann Weaver from the Fairbanks Food Bank. Now, she's actually really big in her and her husband, Bo, super awesome people. They're actually into the Hojitsu thing, which is the Japanese art of gunnery.
Mm-hmm.
But they're huge black belts and big into the firearm thing. We just recently had their daughter in our rifle class this last summer. So she's going to be on the show. We'll talk about the Fairbanks Food Bank. I think that's incredibly important for the community to know those things. That we have that kind of setup here in town when we start getting closer to the holidays.
Yes.
You know, so. But as I alluded to earlier, I was having a conversation with Reverend Stephen Reed. He's a rector of the St. Matthew's Fairbanks here in Fairbanks. And we were texting, and he mentioned that a possible topic for the show would be, hey, what do you think about firearms being labeled as tools? And I was thinking to myself, I've heard that a lot, like, hey, this is just another tool in your toolbox kind of thing. You know, you probably have heard that before.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah.
Especially when somebody teaches you a technique or something, and it's like, okay, here's another tool in your toolbox you can pull out. But a lot of people allude to a firearm as being a tool, and I don't necessarily know if that is a correct way to phrase it.
I think it depends on your definition of what a tool is. Are you using something to get a certain job done? Then sure, you could categorize it as a tool.
Right.
But then I think when you look into the specific set that tool is being used for or applied, then I think it can start to differ from tool, firearm, whatever the case.
Don't disagree with you. And that's where my commentary is going to go. So I appreciate that segue.
Oh, absolutely.
That was absolutely awesome. And that's why I have you around. But today's commentary is actually going to be about that particular thing. So embracing firearms responsibly is probably the biggest thing about that. And I just want to make sure everybody understands that here at Shooter's Corner, we are huge advocates for responsible firearm ownership. We firmly believe in the Second Amendment. We firmly believe that firearms are intended to be as devices or tools, if you wanted to even call them that, where weaker and lesser people can use to not only defend their life or their, you know, themselves or others, but also I like to term them as kind of like an equalizer as well.
Yeah.
Especially for like our female shooters.
It's the greatest equalizer out there.
Oh, absolutely. If you're being attacked by a 300-pound guy, huge muscular thing, and you're only an 85-pound wet, like absolutely.
Yeah.
Huge equalizer. So I really want to hold off before I start reading this after this break. So if we could, let's just go into our first break, and then we'll come back and we'll get into this additional dialogue on this. Stay tuned here. We'll be right back. Shooter's Corner with Chuck Endery. And we got Matt here with us today. KFAR Radio, 97.5, 660 AM. We will be right back.
Ride into winter with a friend. Your Snowway Snowplow. Snowway plows are stronger, smarter, the most reliable plow in the industry. Their wireless controls eliminate messy dash installations and provide the ultimate in-cab flexibility. Better yet, Snowway's patented down-pressure hydraulics increase your plowing efficiency by 30%. The drive-in mount system hooks up in seconds, and their structural plow warranty is the best in the business. Stop by Rogers Auto Repair, your Snowway dealer on Dale Road near the airport, or call 479-6665.
Hey North Pole Fairbanks, it's Preston with family-owned and operated Price RV. Winter's knocking. Is your RV ready? Bring it to us at Price RV. We'll protect your RV's water system against frozen, cracked water lines. Have us winterize your rig now and receive a free roof inspection. Prevent those small leaks from becoming expensive problems next spring. We take care of your rig and treat it like one of our own. Get winter ready. Give us a call now. Price RV in North Pole.
I've got great news for you if you're looking for a job, and I don't mean just any job. How about working with a dynamic team like Auto Trim Design? They're looking for you. They're looking for detail-oriented individuals who know the automotive industry, have excellent time management skills, a willingness to learn, and work well both independently and with the great team at Auto Trim Design. If you're interested, stop by Auto Trim Design on South Cushman and apply today.
Customized by Auto Trim.
KFAR weather.
Overcast this afternoon with a slight chance for isolated showers. Daytime highs approaching 41. Southwest winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Lows around 33 and foggy tonight. Rain becoming mixed precipitation. 1 to 2 inches of snow tonight through tomorrow. That's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Derek Height.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Welcome back, listeners. You're here with Chuck and Matt at Shooter's Corner here in Fairbanks, Alaska. Remember, anytime you call in at 907-458-TALK, that's 458-8255. You can always listen live to us as well at our KFAR Radio app that you can find on the Apple Store or the Android. And also, you can always click on kfarradio.com. Scroll down, Shooter's Corner with Chuck Endereed, and you can listen to our archives, or you can listen by clicking on that giant orange ball that says Listen Live. So even if you're in the middle of nowhere, you can always listen to us. All right, so back to what we were originally talking about, and that's that whole firearm tool context thing. I just want to make sure you understand that we are huge advocates for responsible firearm ownership. I firmly believe in the value of guns when used for their intended purposes, self-defense, hunting, sport, shooting, and the preservation of personal liberties. In a world where physical disparities can leave the vulnerable at a disadvantage, firearms serve as a profound equalizer. They empower the weak, the elderly, women facing threats, and those in isolated communities to stand against aggressors who might otherwise overpower them through sheer strength or numbers. Historical examples abound, from the American Revolution, where armed citizens defended their rights, to modern instances of individuals thwarting home invasions or assaults. Data from the National Firearms Survey estimates that defensive gun uses occur between 500,000 to 3 million times annually in the U.S., often without a shot fired, highlighting their role in deterrence and protection. This utility aligns with the Second Amendment's spirit, ensuring that law-abiding citizens can safeguard themselves and their loved ones without relying solely on external authorities. Yet, this endorsement comes with a critical caveat. Recognizing the full spectrum of a firearm's power demands more than viewing it as a neutral implement. While tools like knives or vehicles can harm, guns designed for lethal efficiency sets them apart, warranting heightened awareness and respect. It is precisely because of their equalizing potential that we must confront the risk head-on, avoiding simplistic analogies that downplay their dangers. The following commentary examines why labeling a gun as just a tool underestimates its profound implications, advocating for a balanced perspective that acknowledges both its utility and the need for caution. Here is my commentary. The assertion that a firearm is merely a tool akin to a hammer or a screwdriver permeates discussions on gun ownership and policy. Proponents of this view emphasize its utility in self-defense, hunting, or sport, drawing parallels to everyday implements that serve constructive purposes without inherent malice. While it is true that tools amplify human capability, equating a gun to such benign objects profoundly underestimates its exceptional lethality and societal ramifications. Firearms are engineered with the explicit intent to inflict fatal harm at a distance, a design feature that elevates them far beyond utilitarian devices. This commentary contends that dismissing guns as just tools obscures their disproportionate risk, supported by empirical data on mortality rates, irreversible injuries, psychological tolls, and regulatory disparities. Acknowledging this distinction is crucial for promoting informed decision-making and ensuring public safety. At the core of a firearms distinction lies its deliberate engineering for destruction. A purpose absent in conventional tools. A hammer, for instance, is designed to drive nails through repeated mechanical force, with any harmful application being incidental to its primary function. In contrast, firearms are defined by their mechanism, a portable device that harnesses an explosive charge to propel a projectile at high velocity, optimized for penetration and incapacitation. This evolutionary trajectory from early matchlocks to modern semi-automatics reflects not neutral utility, but adaptation to warfare, hunting, and enforcement, activities rooted in subduing or eliminating threats. Historical records illustrate this intent. The National Rifle Association's own archives note that guns have served both the highest and basest goals of humanity, including provisioning food and defying authority through lethal means. Unlike a wrench, which requires sustained effort and proximity to cause injury, a gun enables instantaneous remote lethality. This asymmetry in design fosters a false sense of equivalence. A tool's danger is proportional to the user's physical exertion, whereas a firearm is intrinsic to its operation. Let me read that again. This asymmetry in design fosters a false sense of equivalence. A tool's danger is proportional to the user's physical exertion, whereas a firearm is intrinsic to its operation. Dismissing this engineered lethality as mere tool-like functionality risk normalizing an instrument whose baseline capability is death, not construction. Empirical evidence further exposes the fallacy through stark disparities in mortality and injury statistics. In the United States, firearms claim lives at a scale unmatched by household tools. Preliminary data for 2024 indicate approximately 16,576 firearm deaths, excluding suicides, a figure that when included suicides, approaches 45,000 annually based on prior trends. From January to August of 2024 alone, an estimated 30,100 individuals perished from gun-related injuries, marking a 5% decline from 2023, yet underscoring persistent volume. The Gun Violence Archives reports 11,094 homicides, unintentional killings, and defensive gun uses alongside 20,293 injuries and 325 mass shootings in 2024, illustrating the weapon's role in both deliberate and accidental devastation. Comparatively, household tools inflict far fewer fatalities. Power tools, among the most hazardous, cause only 33 deaths per year while generating 196,361 injuries, often treatable lacerations or fractures. Broader home accidents, encompassing falls, poisoning, and tool misuse, total 125,700 deaths in 2023. But these span diverse causes like chemical exposures rather than single device's output. Firearms thus outpace tool-related deaths by orders of magnitude. The gun murder rate stood at 5.6 per 100,000 in 2023, dwarfing accidental tool fatalities, which hover below 0.1 per 100,000. This quantitative chasm reveals how the tool label minimizes the gun's amplified risk. One trigger pull can end a life, whereas tool accidents demand prolonged misuse. Such underestimation perpetuates a narrative that equates improbable hammer homicides with routine gun violence eroding urgency for preventive measures. The irreversibility of gun wounds compounds this danger, rendering firearms uniquely unforgiving compared to other tools. A misstruck hammer might cause a bruise or fracture, which can be recovered through rest and medical intervention. Gunshot injuries, however, often induce permanent psychological and neurological deficiencies. Studies document that survivors face long-term functional impairments, including mobility loss, chronic pain, and organ failure, with chest or abdominal wounds elevating hospital readmission risk by up to 50%. High-velocity projectiles create hydrostatic shock waves that shred tissue beyond simple repair, leading to amputation, spinal damage, and lifelong dependencies. Economically, these shockwaves impose hidden cost. Survivors incur higher healthcare expenditures and elevated substance use disorders, perpetuating cycles of vulnerability. Unlike a tool's reversible harm, where a cut heals without altering one's trajectory, a bullet's trajectory alters lives indelibly, meaning permanently, forever. This permanence demands recognition beyond tool analogies as it transforms isolated incidents into enduring societal burdens. Beyond physical tolls, the psychological and communal repercussions of gun violence underscore its outsized peril. Exposure to interpersonal gun incidents correlates with heightened post-traumatic stress disorder and depressive symptoms, affecting not only victims but witnesses and communities. Research from the American Psychological Association highlights how gun violence induces toxic stress, contributing to mental health disorders and intergenerational trauma. In 2024, with over 488 mass shootings, the ripple effects far eroded trust and normalized anxiety, fracture societal fabrics in ways a slipped screwdriver never could. Labeling guns as tools ignores this devastation, where one's device's misuse amplifies the collective psyche far beyond individual mishaps. Regulatory frameworks further illuminate the inadequacy of the tool metaphor. Firearms are subjected to federal oversight via the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, including background checks and serialization to curb illegal trafficking, measures absence for hammers or saws. State variations tracked by organizations like Everytown Research impose waiting periods, safe storage mandates, and assault weapon bans in progressive jurisdictions, reflecting acknowledged risk. Household tools conversely face minimal federal regulation beyond general safety standards, as their dangers are deemed containable through user discretion. This bifurcated approach affirms that society intuitively treats guns as high-hazard instruments, not pedestrian aids. Equating them diminishes the rationale for such safeguards, potentially exacerbating misuse. In conclusion, while firearms possess tool-like attributes and skilled hands, the analogy falters under scrutiny of their lethal design, statistical dominance and harm, irreversible consequences, psychological scars, and stringent governance. By 2024's metrics alone, tens of thousands dead and injured, the peril is unequivocal, demanding discourse that honors this gravity. Reframing guns as specialized instruments of potential catastrophe rather than innocuous tools promotes accountability through enhanced training, improved storage protocols, and innovative policy changes. Only through such precision can we mitigate tragedies, honoring lives lost while preserving legitimate uses. This nuanced perspective, grounded in evidence, bridges utility and caution, ensuring safety without undue restriction. I think that people need to understand the power that a firearm has, and not just think of it as laying in the bed of your truck or in your cabin or in your house as just a tool that anybody could pick up. Firearms require training. They require a sane, sober person to be able to pick up and operate it. And it's not a freaking screwdriver.
No.
Let's say you, Matt, we got 1 minute.
Yeah, like what I said before, I think your definition of tool, I think it comes down to the user. I've never viewed firearms really as a tool, even though I have said it's a tool in your toolbox. And I think that's more of a metaphorical thing than anything. If people sure. think it literal, Sure. But yeah, there is absolute skill and training and focus that has to go into firearms use that most tools don't need. Anyone can use a handsaw, whether it's good or bad. They're out.
Safe or unsafe, they still probably won't kill themselves.
Yeah, probably not going to kill themselves.
Anybody can pick up a hammer and beat on something with it.
Yep, absolutely. But yeah, everything else that firearms requires dedication.
We'll be right back after this mandatory break. That's what that music tells us. We're here with Chuck and Matt, Shooter's Corner, KFAR Studios here in Fairbanks, Alaska, 97.5, 660 AM. We'll be right back.
From the Satellite West Studio, satellite-based voice communications. You're listening to KFAR Radio, 97.5.
Fox News, I'm John Saucier. Congress still trying to negotiate to end this federal government shutdown. GOP Conference Chair Lisa McClain called on Senate Democrats to pass a short-term funding bill so they can get back to helping the country.
If the Democrats really care about the American people, pass the Clean CR. Stop hijacking the American people and stop pandering to the progressive radical arm of their base.
Democrats want a spending bill that extends enhanced Affordable Care Act subsidies, which will expire at the end of the year. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz.
We need to get them back to the table. We need to understand that the state of Minnesota cannot make up the difference on this, nor should the state of Minnesota have to. We pay more in than we get back. These are Minnesota tax dollars that are now not going anywhere.
House Speaker Mike Johnson says the Democrats' proposal would include provisions that would have reversed Republicans' Medicaid cuts in the so-called Big Beautiful Bill that was passed in July. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
The Anchorage Daily News reports a shutdown of the federal government began Wednesday after Congress failed to find agreement late Tuesday to continue funding operations. Essential services, including Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, and food stamp benefits, won't stop while airports will continue to operate. But the impacts in Alaska, home to a large federal workforce, could be significant. Alaska has been through federal shutdowns before, said Dave Owens, the representative in Alaska for the American Federation of Government Employees, but this one could be different, he said. He said it carries with it a threat from the Trump administration of widespread firings of federal workers, a large, well-paid sector in the state. At the very least, the shutdown, if it goes on a long time, could involve a long period of non-payment for thousands of Alaskans waiting to receive back pay once the government is running again, Owen said. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski on Tuesday said she also fears the Trump administration will follow through on its threats of mass layoffs, which could harm Alaska. Alaska is home to more than 15,000 federal employees, not counting military personnel.
Online at KFAR660.com.
Alaska is new every season. Fall and winter bring new sporting opportunities for grouse, ptarmigan, and other small game hunting. Predator calling and trapping, snowshoeing, and winter camping. Gear up for success at Frontier Outfitters for traps, snares, and calls, guns, and ammunition. You'll stay warm and dry with the right clothing and rest easy with tents, sleeping bags, and camp necessities. Just downstairs, you'll find ATV and snow machine accessories and Sentry Hardware. For every season, there's Frontier Outfitters for your Alaskan lifestyle.
Auto Trim Design has a variety of CompuStar remote starts available that are compatible with Drone Mobile, giving you the option to start your vehicle from your smart device. Ask about their proximity unlock feature that lets you unlock your vehicle as you walk up to it. No more searching for your keys while you're juggling groceries or school supplies. Auto Trim Design has been installing remote starts for almost 30 years. They're reliable, trustworthy, and stand by their work. As Ben says, we'll be here when the other guys are gone.
Hey, North Pole Fairbanks, it's Preston with family-owned and operated Price RV. Winter's knocking. Is your RV ready? Bring it to us at Price RV. We'll protect your RV's water system against frozen, cracked water lines. Have us winterize your rig now and receive a free roof inspection. Prevent those small leaks from becoming expensive problems next spring. We take care of your rig and treat it like one of our own. Get winter ready. Give us a call now. Price RV North Pole.
My name is JT McComas Rowe, and I'm running to represent you on your borough assembly. My tax bill was really high again this year. We all work hard for that money, and sometimes the borough spends it on things that just don't make sense. As your representative on the assembly, I'll work to lower your tax bill, because I understand that it's your money and that you should have a say. Vote JT McComas Rowe for Assembly. on October 7th.
Paid for by McComas Row for Assembly, POB 72789 Fairbanks.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Welcome back, listeners. You're here with Chuck and Matt at Shooter's Corner, 97.5 FM, 660 AM. If you happen to be on that, I don't know, a crystal radio. What else uses AM anymore? I don't know if we're on like single sideband or maybe we're on shortwave somewhere in the world. Anyways, remember, if you missed any part of the show or the commentary earlier, you can always go to KFARradio.com and click on Shooter's Corner with Chuck Indereed, and you'll find our archives on there. As I alluded to earlier, last week's show is not quite posted on there yet, but Teresa's going to get us squared away. Maybe in the future, Matt will. I don't know.
Who knows?
I would hate to have him have computer access around here. while we were on the break, we were talking about firearms and tools, and then maybe just some of the tool stuff that we've had related to us as well. So I remember when I was a kid, I had the scars right here on my hand. I was not properly trained in how to operate a hedge trimmer. So when I had it in automatic mode, meaning I pinned down, like I had this little switch to where you could like turn the power on and then have it like stay in auto on, yeah. Right? So you wouldn't have to constantly hold the trigger down. And it snagged on a particular thicker branch on the hedge, my grandpa's hedge, back in old Caldwell, Idaho. Mm-hmm. And I pulled on it and it was coming right back towards my face. So I took my left hand and blocked it. Well, unbeknownst to me, because it's in automatic mode, the hedge thingy is still clicking back and forth. Like,
oh, no.
Right? And it got this finger here and then a little bit of this finger and this finger here. And I went in and told my grandpa. I did not stick it in my mouth to stop the bleeding because we're going to listen to freaking Matt's story here pretty soon. But nonetheless, yes, I didn't want to drink my own blood because I'm not a vampire. But yeah, I had to go in there. So it's kind of like an odd-looking shape thing.
Oh, yeah. It looks like you had a little... like a burn almost.
No.
It looks like it's protruding, you know, when you first initially get a burn. It just kind of stayed.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, but, you know, at least I didn't lose my fingertips.
Yeah, so about that. So we talked about gun and the injuries and violence that comes around with that. And there's a ton of tool injuries, and I was one of those statistics in 2023. I was...
That's more recent.
Yeah, very, very recent. I was... they were kit stands, which is just this wooden T with legs on it that you put your plate carrier, your helmet on, whatever. I'm using a table saw. I had all the proper protective equipment on, gloves, eye pro, ear pro, you know, the whole nine. And I'm sitting there and I'm running wood through a table saw and there was a knot in the wood. I really didn't clock it at first. So as I'm guiding the wood across, it picked up on the knot. Initially, the piece of wood lifted up, and then because I was putting pressure to keep it on the table as I was moving it in the first place, that same pressure forced the piece of wood back down, and the saw was still grabbing onto it. So it throws the wood, and it cuts the top of my left index finger off at an angle. At the deepest part, I lost about a quarter, maybe a third of an inch of my fingertip off. The shortest part, really, just cut to the middle of my fingertip. But yeah, the whole finger in the mouth comment there. So I didn't have, you know, I don't have a blowout kit on my my table saw. And my first initial thought is there's blood. I need to stop the bleed. Because initially I just saw a splatter line go up my wall of my blood. So the first thing I thought of was I need to keep pressure. And I also knew I needed to get out my door and get into the main area of my house. So I just took my finger, shoved it in my mouth, and bit down as hard as I could to create some sort of pressure until I could figure out a solution. And then I ended up grabbing one of my wife's hair ties and a pen, and I fashioned a tourniquet as high and tight as possible on my fingers I could, which actually ended up saving me from losing more nerve function in my finger. But nonetheless, yeah, I still don't like to look at table saws.
Had you been properly trained on that?
Yeah.
Licensed to operate it?
Definitely not.
You would have known to just push it through with a stick or something.
Yeah, those are expensive, like a dollar.
Yeah. All right, we got a caller. Caller, you're here with Chuck and Matt at Shooter's Corner. Go ahead. What you got?
Hello, this is Randy. A little earlier in your show, you were talking about some cast. I don't know if you're talking about the cast at Pompeii with Vesuvius or some other cast.
Yes, talking about. Yes, Pompeii. Okay. The volcano.
Yeah, and the question was, you know, are there any bodies there? And I went and Googled it just now, and it talked about the eruption of Vesuvius in 79 AD with a huge amount of ash and pumice that poured down onto the city of Pompeii. And it says here, it says, layers of volcanic ash and pumice solidified around the bodies of people and animals. As the soft tissue decayed over the centuries, it left behind hollow cavities, while the skeletons often remained within the empty space in the, anyway, it goes on, and says skeletal remains because the bones and teeth were often still inside the cavities when the plaster was poured, they were preserved within the cast. And it talks about that they were able to even get DNA samples of those bone fragments. And so there's a portion of the body still in some of them casts.
Hmm. There I have it.
According to this, yeah, Google, yeah. Okay, just wanted to comment on that.
Appreciate that, Randy. No, you're good. You're good. See, I knew that there was something still inside there.
Yeah, it's kind of like opening an Easter egg, you know, instead.
Oh.
Crack it open expecting one thing.
Oh, what's those eggs that you have to get have the cream inside of?
The Kinder eggs?
No, not the Kinder Cadbury egg.
Oh, Cadbury. Yeah. I love those.
Yeah, so probably what about, like, when did they start cracking these shells open and the body's, like, dripping? I'm just, never mind. We'll get really dark on that one. Like, the Vesuvius Cadbury egg. Coming soon to a store near you. Dollar store. It'll be at a Dollar Tree store in Virginia or something. Gross. Anyways. Gosh. All right. So back to our original point. Yes. And that's why the military makes you get licensed on how to operate a lawnmower.
Yeah. No, you are absolutely right. I didn't even believe that until I went to Korea. And then we had to get weed whacker, lawnmower license, or
training
added to our licenses. I really thought it was the stupidest thing ever, but some of those people are pretty...
You got to remember, some people come from inner cities. Maybe they've never operated a weed whacker before, and they thought it would be a great idea to, like, I don't know, shave their legs with it or something.
Yeah, it's very weird to meet those types of people, and you're like, there's no way. But then you also meet a ton of people that grew up in Chicago, New York, that don't have driver's license. They don't know how to drive a vehicle, and their first time driving a vehicle is a tank or a Bradley or a Humvee.
You know, it's just funny also, because then they give them a military driver's license and put them on the Richardson Highway.
Yep.
In the wintertime.
Yep.
Yeah. I agree. All right, so... what do we have today?
So,
we beat the tool thing to death.
Yeah, the tool thing. Well, kind of talking about another tool, the SIG P320 broke.
Oh, back in the news again.
Yeah, back in the news again. You guys had a little break, SIG, but good for you. But currently, or excuse me, this was last week, Monday, there was an Area 3 competition, which is a certain national level of USPSA competitions.
Where's that at?
This one, I want to say it was either Ohio or Idaho. It was one of the two. I'll have to look it up. But there was a female getting ready to shoot her course of fire for the stage. And before you do any sort of shooting, you're sitting in a box or at some sort of starting position, you get told to make ready, and most of the time you'll pull out your pistol, insert the magazine, rack the slide, you know, you're making ready, you're getting that firearm ready to fire.
Correct.
And then you reholster and put your hands down by your sides below the holster level, so you're not touching that firearm at all. Multiple, and I mean multiple, like any of the area competitions, they are big, there's a lot of people there. Multiple people said that it was a make ready. She made ready, put the firearm down. And again, these people that are competing at these national levels usually aren't locals. It's people traveling, and they're paying a lot of money to be there. So they know what they're doing. Not saying accidents don't happen, but highly unlikely in this case. But either way, she makes ready, puts her hands down. It was about 2 to 3 seconds after the weapon had been holstered that the SIG P320 discharged in it. The RSO, her grader, whatever you want to call it, already has come out and said that her hand was off the firearm entirely when it was fired. A bunch of people said they couldn't tell if her hand was on it or off it just because of their angle, and a lot of other people were saying her hand was definitely off the firearm. So that thing...
So are you saying this was in Area 2 USPSA?
Area 3.
Area 3?
Yeah.
Because just in recently, June 24th, 2025, in California, say 320 discharged while holstered, but that was with a police officer, school resource officer.
Oh, wow.
So let me type in Area 3.
Area 3.
USPSA 2025 SIG discharge.
Includes states of Iowa, Kansas, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, and South Dakota. Yeah, I'd have to. So I've been watching Ben Stoger, who's a USPSA grandmaster.
Who was just recently kind of hemmed up.
Yeah, a little bit. Watching him, a few other notable USPSA guys, and all of them were talking about it. I have a buddy who was there as well who brought it up. He didn't see it exactly, but something happens in that this community within minutes. Everyone and their mother knows about it. So,
Well, at least as of right now, there's nothing in the main news about it.
Yeah, so. I think they're still investigating if it was her or the SIG itself, and I think people are really afraid of coming out and saying this was a SIG problem, or people are saying we don't want a SIG because they're just immediately throwing lawsuits at them.
They definitely are.
Yeah.
So what do we have else going on in the big world?
Big world, man.
We got to go into our last break.
Oh, yeah.
That's what we got going on in the world.
That is, yeah.
Our last break. All right, stay tuned. We'll be right back with Chuck and Matt, Shooter's Corner, KFAR 97.5, 660 AM. We'll be right back.
Who turned out the lights? It's lighting season in Alaska, and you don't want to be left in the dark. At Auto Trim Design, we carry a wide variety of Moose lights from Vision X and Baja Designs, Tiny Monster LED headlights, and backup lighting to keep your path bright. Your safety is important to us. Drive with clarity and peace of mind with Moose lights professionally installed. Stop by Auto Trim Design today and let us design the right package that fits your needs. Auto Trim Design's philosophy hasn't changed in over 40 years. We treat every customer the Alaska way, with honesty, integrity, and respect.
Hey, North Pole Fairbanks, it's Preston with family-owned and operated Price RV. Winter's knocking. Is your RV ready? Bring it to us at Price RV. We'll protect your RV's water system against frozen, cracked water lines. Have us winterize your rig now and receive a free roof inspection. Prevent those small leaks from becoming expensive problems next spring. We take care of your rig and treat it like one of our own. Get winter ready. Give us a call now. Price RV in North Pole.
What does it look like when your faithful friend in the driveway has an off day? Well, it looks like no fun, like bumming a ride to work, the store, rescheduling lunch with your yoga instructor, all because your four-wheeled pal is waiting for parts. We do our own routine maintenance, but our chariot depends on us to schedule that for them. Airboat and inboard service too, family owned and operated, keeping Fairbanks on the road since 1967. Rogers Auto Repair.
KFAR weather.
Daytime highs approaching 41 today. Under cloudy skies with a chance for mixed precipitation becoming all rain. Southwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Rain becoming mixed precipitation with fog in spots tonight. Lows dip down to about 33. Cloudy skies expected. 1 to 2 inches of snow tonight through tomorrow. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Welcome back, listeners. You're here with Chuck Indereden in the studios here in Fairbanks, Alaska. We have Matt with us, as always. And, well, you know what? Cindy abandoned us today.
Gosh darn it.
I know. It's all good. I'm getting her hair done.
Oh, I thought it was
what is that with? I just cut my hair myself. Like, you know how much money that saved me over the last 20 years?
Men, I think they hit a certain point where the moment their hairline starts to recede, it's either a
my hair
cut
is not receding.
I'm not saying yours is. I'm saying
and you have like red hair, so you're like a ginger. You have no soul anyways.
You're absolutely correct, Chuck. I still have a hairline. I don't know if you've met many, like, many sergeant like first classes in the Army. 28. many sergeant first classes, the moment they lose any hair or it turns gray, bald. Immediately bald.
Yeah, I don't know.
Balls walking around.
Yeah, because I did 24 years and I still have my hair.
Yeah, it's very rare. Very rare.
All right. Oh, yeah. And it was brought to my attention. Headlights, people. remember, we're supposed to have what? 1 to 2 inches of snow tonight? Was that for this location or is that for like Norway or something?
I don't know, but North Pole had a lot more snow than here when I left my house this morning.
Yeah. So please, for the love of God, drive with your freaking headlights on. Hey, and just having it in auto mode doesn't mean that your headlights came on.
Correct.
It means sometimes your front headlights are on, but your rear brake, your rear taillights are still off, right?
Yeah.
I see a lot of cars driving around nowadays, and they're like, sometimes you just have to reach. I get it. It's inconvenient sometimes for some people, right? Like to reach out, actually do something mechanically. But reach down there and turn on the headlight. It'll ding at you and tell you, hey, you left your headlights on.
It usually makes some sort of light pop up on your dash. Usually when you turn your headlights on, all of your gauge cluster also lights up because it's assuming it's dark enough. Yeah.
It's like a clue.
Really weird, right?
Yeah, how that happens.
Also, don't forget to turn off your headlights when you park. Like me this morning, I dropped my daughter off, got back home. And within the hour of dropping her off and coming here, I went out to my car to warm it up, and it was dead.
Well, that's because you drive old stuff.
Yeah,
like absolutely. It didn't have a warning in there, told you that you had your ding, 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 lights are still on.
No, I'm pretty sure I ripped that cable. Probably. But yeah, don't forget to turn them off when you park.
Yeah, when you're installing your backup thermonuclear device. All right, so, yeah, headlights, please. Thank you. We love you. Don't want to run into you. I don't meet people like that. FRTs, force reset triggers. Atrius has a style that's out there. Actually worked out pretty well.
Yeah.
What we end up having to do with that one part, though, because we actually put one in a lower receiver, and it's phenomenal.
So the Atrius, really quick for anyone listening, it's the Atrius Super Selector. And what that is...
For the record, it's not automatic.
Not automatic. You have... it's one of the first of its kind. You have three positions. You have safe, semi, and super semi, which is that force reset function. For the Atrius development group, their safety selector, there is an issue with the sear engagement for the trigger bar, and it's... What, a tenth of a millimeter? Like, it's so small.
It literally was.
Yeah, we brought out the Dremel because we were having some issues with it, and we shaved it down just barely enough to where what was happening was if you had your rifle open and you're doing a functions test on it, you wouldn't notice anything out of the ordinary. But the moment that pressure of your bolt carrier group was put on top of this this bar, this reset bar, you were having an issue with it wanting to move when it's not supposed to and taking up a little more space. It's honestly, it's not noticeable. We really didn't notice it until we watched the video on it. But it does take some noticing in the first place.
Thank God we had cell coverage out at the Fox Range.
Yes.
Because we were able to like look it up on scene and everything. Yep. I was like, oh shoot, that's what we have going on here.
Yeah.
Like literally it was a feedback that you got through that selector lever to let you know that, oh yeah, it's holding up. It's getting held up by that one-tenth of a little bit of machining that needed to be done.
Yep.
And then the other thing we figured out real quick is if we would have what we call hammer follow. Remember that?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
So if you're using just a regular standard carbine buffer or even an H1 buffer, well, let's put it this way. Something that's at least not 5.4 ounces, which is an H3 buffer. If you're using anything other than an H3 buffer with this particular gassing system that we had on this gun, which was an A2 upper, it would have what we call hammer follow.
Yeah.
Which was kind of weird because you could literally, it would fire in semi, you would put it in super select,
yep.
And then it would fire one. But then if you opened the BCG, the bolt carrier group, opened that up and ejected that round out, it would be a live round in there. And then it would just have a small indent on the primer. But that's always just because you have a floating fire pin in
it. It was the lightest primer strike you could probably get.
Which is what a normal primer strike that you get on an AR when you bolt chamber A round anyways. Yeah. Right? But if you opened up the action, separated the upper receiver from the lower receiver without ejecting that round out. Got it? Then you would see that the hammer is forward, which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
And so we were able to talk to Craig, a good friend of ours, and he said, oh, dude, you got like hammer follow.
Yeah.
Meaning the bolt's coming back, but just enough to chamber around, but that hammer's following that BCG back to the forward position. You need a heavier buffer.
And I think, thinking back on it too, I think one of the other issues is when it's in semi alone, that bar isn't moving with it at all, that that little hook. And when you put it in super semi or forced reset, you're adding another piece of that puzzle. And I think when we were doing that, that was causing it to not go back all the way, because for the listeners, traditionally, you don't want to run anything carbine length with a rifle length, a carbine length buffer or buffer system with a rifle length gas system, just because you do have a good amount of dwell time, but the gas is taking a lot longer to go back. It's a lot softer shooting than a standard carbine length gas system. So you already have a really soft
shooting. Meaning like running an A2 upper.
Yeah, A2 upper on a carbine length.
Even though it's still 16.1.
Yeah, and I think we were just within tolerances with those that carbine length buffer system that we didn't notice and we wouldn't have. But once we started to add everything else, we started to tweak it and tune it. We found out what really worked for yours, because mine didn't need any of it really, except for that Car 15 build, the XM177 I did. That's when I needed that H2 buffer that Craig gave me. But on my other stuff, I didn't need it at all because I had proper dwell time gassing and all that, to where I was essentially overgassing the system, not undergassing it to cause that issue.
Well, just so you know, I went to Primary Arms and picked up two more Strike H2s.
Oh, really?
Three more Strike H3s, just so I would have them on hand.
Yeah.
I'm never going to build up my stockpile, I should say, like some other guys have of AR parts and stuff like that, but for the love of God. But oh, and make sure you also have a mil-spec trigger in there, too. Like, yes. If you have a single-stage Geissele in there, it's not going to work.
No.
So it's got to be a two-stage or something like that. But, yeah. Anyways, what else going on in the world? You said you wanted to bring up one more thing.
Yeah, the NFA stuff that's been in the news pretty much all year and that's coming up and relevant to anyone that...
January 1st?
Though? Yeah, January 1st. You will no longer be required to pay $200 for a NFA item tax stamp. Now,
only for suppressors, though.
Anything.
Okay, you sure?
So it's short-barreled rifles, anything that's considered an AOW, any other weapon, anything like machine guns and that sort of stuff, you still pay all the taxes for that. But for SBRs and suppressors, you are not paying the $200.
That's what I thought. No automatics are included.
Yeah, no automatics. Yeah, that's what I was going. Anything that requires a ton of more money.
Short-barreled rifle, short-barreled shotguns, and suppressors.
So you still, the common misconception people are thinking of is, oh, the $200 tax stamp's going away, we're not doing tax stamps. No, that's completely incorrect. You still will go in. You still will do all the same paperwork, the fingerprinting, the background check, everything that normally has happened when you do anything regarding a tax stamp, a Form 4, a Form 1. You're just not paying the $200 fee. Now, what's going to happen with that is, and it's already happening, you have the people before January 1st that are purchasing suppressors that don't care about the $200 tax stamp fee because they know the moment that $200 goes away,
it's going to be a surge.
Yeah, it's a really big kind of contention piece when it comes to suppressors. People don't want to pay the $200 tax, so they're like, I'm not going to get a suppressor. So now with that $200 tax being gone, again, still people don't realize you will have to fill out the information and all the background check and stuff, but these suppressors are getting ready to go. A lot of companies have actually pulled their suppressors off the shelves.
Yes, they have.
Getting ready for the January 1st stuff.
I know a couple stores. We have some friends that live back in Pennsylvania, and they've just been buying as much as they can.
Yeah, because it's going to get...
And holding them until after January
1st. What's going to happen is those NFA lead times, like my recent suppressor that was a 5-day turnaround, these lead times are going to go through the roof again. It's not going to go back to 9 to 10 months, maybe a month, 2 months, but they will go up again. If you want to get a suppressor as quick as possible, I would recommend doing it before January 1st. You can go onto Silencer Shop, look up whoever's a kiosk. So anyone that's able to do all the stuff under Silencer
Shop. Alaska Ammo has a kiosk.
Yep, they do. And I would just go to Alaska Ammo anyway. They have the largest inventory of suppressors here. But you can go in and you can do all your stuff. It really takes no time at all. If you don't want to pay the tax, the $200 tax, but you still want to reserve a suppressor, you can go on to Silencer Shop. You can pick out your suppressor, you know, do the whole nine. And then when you go to check out, you can either do pay now with the $200 tax stamp, whatever, or you can do, I want to say it's like freedom saving, whatever, where you're paying for the suppressor, you get that suppressor reserved for you. And then when January 1st comes around and there's no longer a $200 fee, then they ship off your suppressor immediately. They fill out all the stuff, it goes up and gets transferred out, you know, whatever the case is.
Yeah, that's awesome. Hey, we're getting ready to close out the show today. I just wanted to go back and touch on one thing. So our next Alaska Concealed Handgun Permit class and basic pistol class for any citizen, really, is going to be October 11th and 12th. We also have classes already listed on c4traininggroup.com for November and December. But remember that whole part at the beginning of the show where we talked about, hey, firearms, sure, you might want to call them a tool, but you need to be trained on them. They're just not like picking up a hammer or a screwdriver. Get training on them. If you love your friends and your family, tell them about our training. It's legit.
Yep.
Like, we have over 40 years, probably 6 years combined experience. We got another instructor we might even be bringing on, who's a special agent here in the area. And so it's going to be awesome. But nonetheless, October 11th to 12th, go to c4traininggroup.com and get in there. Also, you can always go listen to our archives, kfarradio.com. We'll see you next week. Next week, we're going to have Ann Weaver on from the Food Bank and the Hojitsu Group. All right, we'll be here next week. Take care, drive safe, stay out of the snow.
You've been listening to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio. Brought to you by Price RV, Auto Trim Design, by Rogers Auto Repair, and by Frontier Outfitters. To listen back to this or any past episode, log on to kfarradio.com and click on the archive page. And thanks for news and conversation.